Oh, we're on. Okay. Good morning. This is a meeting of the title setting board. The date is December 18th, 9:30 a.m. We're meeting in the Aspen room at the Secretary of State's office, 1700 Broadway. The time is 9:30 a.m. And we have one item on the agenda today, which is 2013-2014. Number 48, labeling of genetically modified food. And this matter comes on for a rehearing. Is the proponent present?
Madam Chair, Trey Rogers here for the proponents. Larry Cooper and Cheryl Gray are here with us this morning.
Thank you. And it looks like the petition, the petitioner's present.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Mark Ruskin on behalf of the petitioners.
And they're present?
They're not present.
They're not present. Okay. Mr. Ruskin, do you want to just start out and tell the board about your motion?
I'd love to. Thank you. I know the board has gone through the motion, and rather than redo that or kind of repeat what you've already read. I've actually gone back into the measure and found that there are a number of issues that need to be addressed in addition to what we've raised, and we think as an extension of what we've raised. And rather than tick off all of those issues, Madam Chair, with your permission, I've actually taken a shot at recrafting a ballot title, and seems to me that may be a more efficient way for the board to consider some of these
issues. That'd be great. If you have copies of that, if you could just tender them to.
I do. I'm not sure. Let's see. Not sure I have enough for everyone.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
So if, with the board's permission, I'd like to tick through some of the notable issues. And I think there are at least five, in addition to covering in a more thorough and accurate way the exemptions and the coverage of the measure. Number one can be found in the first phrase. This really isn't a measure that concerns labeling of genetically modified foods. It has exemptions. It has limitations. It has certain genetically modified foods that are left out or by design taken out of the measure. And the statement that it addresses genetically labeling of genetically modified foods is inaccurate and we think misleading. We think it's more appropriate to say that it mandates additional labeling of some foods and then being specific. And we think that the next phrase, as we indicated in our motion, is not really a central element. What the label actually says or doesn't say probably isn't as critical to voters as where the measure extends to and what it doesn't extend to. And this brings up a second issue, which I think is really important. This entire measure is about the misbranding of food. And under the statute, what sorts of remedies and requirements are triggered related to the misbranding of food. Misbranding is never even referred to in the title. And we think that that ought to be, to the extent that the essence of the measure really is the proposed change to section, Colorado Revised Statute section 25-5-411, the definition of misbranding, in which all of this measure fundamentally takes place. We think that there ought to be some reference so that people understand the context of what's going on. This isn't simply an administrative requirement. This is an inclusion within the Colorado Revised Statutes of a requirement and a set of remedies related to misbranding. And hence, we have indicated in this next phrase that the measure treats certain food as misbranded in Colorado if it meets the criteria of genetically modified or genetically engineered as defined in the measure. We think that that reference to a definition in the measure is important. There is no definition currently. And while we could and have not asked the board to do so, incorporate these new definitions, because they are so technical, we ought to at least indicate in the title itself that there are definitions to which voters can refer. So that phrase would basically address misbranding for genetically modified or genetically engineered food that is not labeled as such. The bulk of the title amendments that we have proposed here track fairly well our motion for rehearing, and while I'm happy to go through them, it seems to me that may not be the best use of your time. We do think that, for instance, something like animal food, well, in fact, the measure addresses food and drink for animals, and we just think that that's, if it was in the measure, presumably it had a purpose, and presumably it was significant. And we've made other comparable changes. We believe that the omission of the limited labeling requirement relative to raw agricultural commodities deserves treatment in the measure. But then on the sixth line from the bottom that begins engineered semicolon, this title suggests, because of the reference to regulations by the Department of Public Health, that it is simply an administrative issue. In fact, it is not. This is plugging a new labeling requirement, mandate, into a statute that imposes criminal prosecution for violations. And for voters not to understand that, I think, is important. And it is triggered. I understand that the board isn't required to list every potential effect of a measure, but this is one in which the proponents included a specific reference to the regulatory process. And the title left alone indicates that it is merely a regulatory process and that there are no other potential penalties. And we think that is grossly misleading, and think that the phrase that we have suggested ought to be inserted. As we raised in the motion, the title says that there are that there is regulatory authority that is authorized. In fact, it requires, it mandates, it uses the word require in connection with these labeling requirements and CDPHE is a responsibility, and we think that what is authorized is regulations for inspection and testing. And therefore, that phrase ought to be clarified. And lastly, the suggestion that in the title as it exists, that there is no private right of action created in connection with labeling requirements is not accurate. It's limited to certain cases, those cases in which the question is whether or not there has been conformance with labeling requirements. And likewise, the title omits the reference to the fact that the restriction on a private right of action relates to sale as well as advertising, and that this issue relates to manufacturers, distributors, or retailers. So there are parties to whom for whom a private right of action will still be applicable. Parties that are not covered by those definitions. And we think that that's important for the title to reflect. So I have done what I promised I wouldn't do, which is take you through my proposed redraft, but I'm certainly available for any questions.
Any questions?
Well, sorry. I do have some questions, but I'm not sure what the right process should be going forward, how we want to start.
Maybe we should hear from the...
Yeah, I mean, there may be some that the proponents are on board with. There may be some we have to discuss, so I'm not quite sure how you want to proceed.
Let's go ahead and hear from the proponents.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Supreme Court case law, as you all know well, has told us that the title for initiative should be succinct, that they need not reflect all of the details or nuances of a measure, and that even when the initiative concerns several complicated issues, title should be brief. That's what you did 2 weeks ago. You drafted a title for this measure that meets those requirements. The objectors would have you add every detail of the measure. In fact, I think if the objectors kind of obviate the need for the title board, we should just reprint the measure itself if they had their way. That's not what the statute and the Supreme Court have told us is the duty of this board. So for those reasons, we ask you to deny the motion for rehearing and leave the title as you drafted it 2 weeks ago. I don't want to get into yet the specific 18 points raised in the objection. I think it probably makes more sense to take those as they come up, if that's appropriate, Madam Chair. But I would like to address the new arguments that Mr. Gruskin has made. You know, the deadline for filing a motion for rehearing was a week ago. We did not see in the motion filed a week ago an objection to the concerning language. We did not see, as of the deadline a week ago, an argument about incorporating misbranding, the definition of misbranding, or reference to the fact that the initiative would be within the misbranding section of code. We did not see, as of the deadline a week ago, an objection to the title's failure to reference that criminal prosecution would be available for violation of the new labeling requirements. We did not see in the motion that was filed an objection that the title did not reference the requirement or the provision authorizing inspections. So these are late, these new arguments. It is not fair. On the morning of the hearing, at the beginning of the hearing, for the objectors to raise these new arguments. And so I would suggest those new arguments brought up today for the first time, that is not brought up in the written motion filed a week ago, should be rejected out of hand by the board. Unless you've got specific questions, I'll stop there. I think it's probably a more efficient process to deal with the specific objections one at a time, if that makes sense.
Any questions?
Well, I think he answered my first question was going to be whether there were any of the suggested list of changes that you were either in favor of or okay with. I think you answered that in the negative, right?
I did.
Okay. Well, that was going to be where I was going to start. So I'm not sure where you want to go from there.
Given that they're objecting to each item, I think we can just go back through either looking at the title that the objectors have proposed or looking at the motion itself. I tend to agree with the objectors that it's a little bit easier to work off of a draft than it is off of the motion, but whatever the board's pleasure is on that. And I suppose first off, we need to decide the issue of whether we're going to consider the new items that have been raised. Maybe that's a good place to start.
Could I address that issue, Madam Chair?
Sure.
There's nothing in the statute that requires that a motion for rehearing be exhaustive. It's simply a timeline. It establishes a point beyond which no objection may be raised. In addition, I would note that anybody who's sitting here has authority under the statute to come up and say something and then appeal that issue to the Supreme Court under 1-40-107. Therefore, if anyone sitting here could say anything about the title, certainly the proponents having been put on notice that there was going to be a title challenge cannot be said to have been unfairly surprised. In addition, it's their measure. Unless they are surprised that the measure deals with things like misbranding, or the statute includes criminal prosecution, it seems to me that there is no surprise that can possibly adhere to them. And therefore, I think you're authorized to take up each and every issue that we've raised.
Mr. Rogers, do you have any legal argument about regarding that point, the point you've raised about you raised it kind of two ways. You said an unfair surprise, and then you did seem to sort of make the argument that petitioners are now rebutting, which is that there does need to be some specificity in the motion for rehearing. Do you want to make any further legal arguments about that?
Well, sure. I think the statute very clearly sets forth the deadline for the filing of a motion for rehearing. It certainly looks to me from the way that the statute is written that the filing of that motion sets the parameters around the issues that can be considered by the board. For instance, I think if someone, either the objectors or a citizen appearing here to offer comment, couldn't raise a single subject issue that wasn't raised in a motion for rehearing. No one could come here today, I would suggest, and raise the issue that there are changes that are outside of the review and comment process, go beyond the review and comment process. So, I think a fair reading of the statute is that the filing of the motion puts some sideboards around the issues that the board can take up. Certainly, any member of the public can come and make a comment about the matters raised in the motion. The reason there's a deadline, the reason there's a week between the filing deadline and this hearing, is so that the proponents have an opportunity to review the objections and prepare a response. It's simply not fair or appropriate to allow entirely new arguments to be raised after they were not identified in the written objection filed, motion for rehearing filed a week ago.
Right. So the statute, 14107, subsection B, states that a motion for rehearing must be typewritten and set forth with particularity the grounds for rehearing.
Well, may I?
Go ahead, yeah.
So I tend to agree with Mr. Rogers that this sort of allows, if not encourages, kind of sandbagging proponents and us by bringing things in that nobody's had a chance really to think through or prepare to respond to. On the other hand, we've taken, I think, a very liberal view of the provision you just read, and we have addressed motions for rehearing that essentially just say the board should reconsider because the title is incomplete and misleading, and adopting Mr. Rogers' view would either require us to simply ignore a motion like that, which I'd probably be fine with, or it would encourage people to file that kind of motion, and then everybody would be guessing completely about what was going on. I think our practice in the past has been to consider these things. In addition, sometimes we get into these rehearings, start considering, make one change here, and then we just sort of on our own or with everybody who's present decide that something that now we need to make this other change to improve it, and we've done that in the past, I know, maybe we shouldn't have, but I think that's basically been our practice. So I'm sort of inclined to look a little bit skeptically toward the newly raised things, but not to kind of view them as completely outside of our jurisdiction, essentially, to consider.
And I tend to agree with that. You know, it's been a very kind of new process. A lot of times the question that we end up with on a rehearing looks nothing like the question that we had on an initial hearing. If the motion as stated, if we had a situation where Mr. Gruskin was coming forward and now raising a single subject issue, I might be more inclined to understand Mr. Rogers' point that, you know, this is brand new, out of the blue, raising a second jurisdictional type of an argument. And that, I would think, is more kind of along the lines of sandbagging than I would sort of thinking about and going through different changes that need to be made. Because even when you file a motion and to your point, a lot of times we do it ourselves, where, you know, somebody suggests one change and then that sort of, they didn't suggest it in their motion, but it then has a domino effect of having other things changed in the question. So, but I am somewhat sympathetic to Mr. Rogers' argument. And if there's some other kind of accommodation you would want, like, you know, continuing it or taking a break or coming back in the afternoon or something like that, that would be fair to all sides, you know, I'd probably be more inclined to look at that rather than to preclude them from making those arguments.
Yeah. First of all, I'd say I sort of generally agree that we can consider all of the new arguments, especially since they're, to a large extent, at least somewhat overlapping with what's in the motion. Madam Chair, I think what I would do is sort of recommend a way to proceed, which is, I think the first thing we should do is, as we typically do, is look at our single subject and then the suggested new one and see, you know, what we like and if we're comfortable with what we did before or want to change it. And then I actually would go through the written grounds for reconsideration in the motion. The reason for my preference for that rather than for starting with the alternative title is that I am very sympathetic to the argument that this quite simply looks like a wall of text to me, and I think it's a bit too much to use as a starting point, however much of it we may end up incorporating in one form or another.
I'm fine with that. Tend to agree, in fact.
All right, then why don't we just go through the motion for the rehearing? Is that your suggestion?
I think so, unless you want to just start with a single subject first. Because I think once we have the single subject locked down, the rest maybe flows a little more easily. You know, in my review of these grounds for reconsideration, you know, I think there are a few of them that are certainly worth giving hard consideration to, and some others that maybe are a bit less worthy of that.
That's fine.
And I'm fine with that. I guess I should ask, I don't have a sign-up sheet. I guess before we start working, I should see if there's anybody else who wanted to comment. No. Okay. So, right. Let's look at the single subject then. Currently, it's a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning labeling of genetically modified food.
I think I'd start with the point that from the suggested changes by the objectors. The mandating additional language I do think makes sense. You know, the some foods in place of genetically modified to me is not helpful to the voters because some could mean anything. You know, the measure does say genetically modified or produced with genetic engineering, which are different things. But I'm not sure for the voters' purpose that genetically modified isn't broad enough to cover them both, since we don't use ands. So that would be my starting point.
Yeah, I mean, I frankly thought the single subject was fine the way it was. Genetically engineered and genetically modified in the measure, as I read it, have the same definition and essentially mean the same thing. So I'm not that concerned about putting them both in there. Again, we're not rewriting the statute, which is what I get a little bit of a feel that we're sort of just writing another statute here. We're writing a title for voters who are, for the most part, not lawyers looking at these as kind of defined legal terms. So I think that the title as it was yes, it is, the single subject is more general than the precise contours of the measure, but that's okay in my view. The single subject's just supposed to tell you basically what you're talking about. If anything, I think it's overly specific already, but I would probably just have left it as concerning labeling of genetically modified foods. I think that's accurate as a statement that a lay person would understand what the measure is about, which is what we're trying to do with that clause. I suppose I'd be okay with mandating additional or with just additional, because it's true, genetically modified foods already have certain labeling requirements like other foods already do. And so I guess I'd be okay with that. Additional was the most tempting word to me.
So then that would look like basically a change to the Colorado revised statutes, either concerning additional or mandating additional labeling of genetically modified foods, but we'd be okay. I mean, I'm okay with the mandating additional. I'm okay with the mandating. What do you think?
I think I'm okay with sort of any variant. I'm not. Mr. Domenico has, I think, reminded me that, you know, the single subject is just sort of very general notice of the about, and we can use the trailer to get more specific about it. So,
Mr. Rogers, you want to? You look like you want to get up.
I was perching there. Well, the proponents would object to the use of the term additional. The use of the term additional would suggest to the voter that there is already some requirement for the labeling of genetically modified food. That requirement does not exist in law today. So I think that the use of the word additional would tend to mislead voters. Mandating, I think in our discussion 2 weeks ago, we suggested that instead of concerning, we used the word requiring. So I don't, you know, mandating, requiring, concerning, I think is not a big issue, but additional is problematic.
Oh, this just reminds me of a conversation we had long ago about, I mean, the this is what it's about. The way it's, the current title is in the kind of old-fashioned, traditional way that we do it, where the concerning clause is just what it's about, what it's concerning. And in fact, I once suggested using the word about instead of concerning, but it sounds less legally, and so we've rejected that. But and then later on, the after in connection with is supposed to, when we use this format, say what it does, the requiring, the mandating, the exempting. So if we're gonna, I think we need to do one or the other. Either use this as just an explanation of what it's about, or get rid of the whole format of in connection therewith, etc. And I think we sort of went back and forth on this last time and decided to go with the traditional format. So I would leave it concerning for that reason, or switch to about, as I've suggested in the past. And then leave the details of what the mandate is and what the requirements are to the rest of it.
If that's a motion to just leave the single subject as we have it, I would make that motion.
Then I'll second it.
All right, and then all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. So we'll leave that as is, which then takes us to what it does.
At this point, I think, do we want to go through the grounds for reconsideration?
Sure.
I think the first one does actually make a good point in that the language of the measure is mandatory with the department shall promulgate regulations. So that seems like a legitimate change to make.
Yeah, so I don't have strong feelings about that one. Mr. Gruskin's point, I guess, was that it's the requirements are also about inspection and testing and labeling, apparently, in the last section of the measure. I'm not totally convinced that the provision is all that material, frankly, to a voter, that some state agency would have regulatory authority seems unsurprising to me and not all that material. But yeah, if we want to change the word authorizing to requiring, I'm okay with that.
It's fine with me.
Okay.
Okay. What's the next one? You want to talk about private rights of action? I would have been fine just striking that whole thing.
I think I'd like to actually hear from the objector a little more on this one and exactly what private rights of action are going to exist here. I mean, we heard sort of a very hypothetical, well, there's other people, but I don't really know who those people are in the real world, what could actually happen.
All right. Mr. Gruskin, you want to come up and talk to us about private rights of action?
Sure. So let me give you a solid example.
Let me just start by asking, is that something you think is central to the – are you suggesting that – be stricken, or are you suggesting that be changed?
I think it should be changed.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
The measure specifically addresses, in terms of private rights of action, retailers, distributors, manufacturers, all of which are defined terms. I'll give you, for instance, of someone who is not covered by those three terms, someone who owns a grain silo, does not manufacture, and does not retail. That is a person who neither distributes. That is someone who simply lends their facility for the purpose of storing a grain that may or may not be genetically modified. And that is not a person who is producing or processing any sort of seed. That is not a person who, under the definition of distribution, is distributing or transporting. That is someone who is storing a grain. And therefore, that person is still subject to whatever rights of action may exist, but they certainly have not been exempted. So why not just say that these are the people, and I'm not asking you to define manufacturer, distributor, and retailer in the title. Obviously, interested parties can go to the measure. But there are private rights of action. In addition to the private right of action exclusion relates to whether or not you conform to labeling requirements as one of these three parties. The issue, there's nothing in the measure that takes the private right of action over suing for some other reason out of the arsenal of potential plaintiffs' attorneys. And therefore, only conformance to labeling requirements is covered by this exclusion. And I think that's relevant. And so that is a little bit of background as to why there, the language that you've included isn't functionally or legally accurate.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Mr. Rund. Just feel free to just stand in line. Sometimes don't really know to.
So let's start with this. This initiative does not create a private right of action. And there is no private right of action currently in this title. In fact, the title, the section very clearly gives enforcement authority to the Department of Health and Public Health and Environment. So, for instance, in 25.5405, we see that violation is a misdemeanor. Well, that's something that can be prosecuted by the district attorney. In 25.5404, we see that the department may seek an injunction for violation of the statute. In 25.5420, we see the department has enforcement and rulemaking authority. In 25.4421, the department has the authority, the right to inspect. So this is a statute that is clearly set up to be administered and enforced by the Department of Public Health and Environment. There is no private right of action. So this is really a red herring. Now, why, when we wrote the initiative, did we say that this creates no private right of action against distributors, manufacturers, or retailers? The reason for that is that if you look at Q, which is really the meat of the initiative, so that's Section 3, new subsection Q, it creates new duties. Who does it create new duties for? For distributors, manufacturers, and retailers. So when we said no private right of action is created against distributors, manufacturers, and retailers, we simply mirrored the list of those for whom we have created a new duty. Let me go to the grain silo operator. If the grain silo operator doesn't fall into any of these categories, then he is not regulated. He is not impacted in any way, shape, or form by this measure. We can walk through the language of Q. We see a labeling requirement on the first few lines. And we see that those regulated are the manufacturer on line 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, on line 7. The labeling shall be maintained by the distributor, also on line 7. Displayed in a clear and conspicuous manner on the retail store shelf. Well, that's maintained by the retailer. In fact, we go on to say, or bin in which such commodity is displayed for sale by the retailer. So we've simply mirrored the language concerning a private right of action to the new duties that are created under Q. There's no reason to think that there could possibly be a private right of action created by this initiative against any party other than those identified. And, you know, sorry, let me note one more thing. I think in the staff draft, we had additional language in this section of the proposed title. That additional language, I believe, was something along the lines of no private right of action is created against distributors, manufacturers, or retailers. And I think Mr. Domenico asked to have that stricken as unnecessary. I would agree that it is unnecessary to insert those additional words in the title.
Go ahead.
It's important to note that the measure specifically talks about the function of storage. Let me take you to what Mr. Rogers has said is the meat of the provision, paragraph Q, 3B. This is that whole sworn statement. You know, you can take yourself out of the chain of liability for misbranding if it's produced by a person who grows non-genetically engineered food and obtains a statement that it's been entirely segregated from and has not been knowingly commingled with a food or food component that has been genetically engineered. In other words, there may not be, the point is, I don't know. And it's not this board's obligation to figure out whether or not silo operators, in fact, could be held liable. But there are functions that have nothing to do with manufacturers, retailers, and distributors that are covered here. And why would you not put the language of the measure in? Because, frankly, it is not true that no private right of action is created in connection with the labeling requirements. As the truth is, there's no private right of action created in connection with manufacturers, distributors, and retailers. That's the specific wording of the measure. Why would you not acknowledge that? So I have a feeling I'm close to a dead horse, and I'm going to walk away from it.
Well, I do have a little bit. I mean, the measure does have that language in whatever that is, subsection 4 there. Like, it could just say there is no private right of action for failure to conform to the labeling requirements. So it doesn't say that, and I guess I'm trying to figure out who might also have some obligations, and I'm not really seeing it. And Mr. Rogers has conveyed that that is basically the entire universe of people who would have an obligation. And Q is the only requirement that the measure imposes on anybody. And so if the private right of action language applies to the entire universe of people covered by Q, then it seems to me that the title is accurate, but I guess I have some small bit of doubt about that.
And I guess, you know, speaking as someone who was never wild about including the language at all, I think the problem is that it could be misleading if we can imagine the scenario, which I agree it's not our job to figure out what the legal consequences are, but I think that if somebody signs a sworn statement and that turns out to be false, then certainly that retailer may bring an action against the person who signed the sworn statement, and that would be a private action. I don't know that. I mean, I think tangentially this creates that action, not directly, but you could imagine it happening. So go ahead.
I just want to point out that the sworn statement under 3B would be obtained from the party that sold to such person. They're going to either be a manufacturer or a distributor. So I just don't see, despite Mr. Gruskin's creative efforts to identify a new party against whom there could be a private right of action, they just don't exist.
You have anything?
I think that we don't need the specificity of the manufacturer, seller, distributor, whatever, manufacturer, distributor, retailer language. The sale or advertising suggestion, you know, on the other hand, I mean, that's, you know, and I don't know, being a little more direct maybe in saying, you know, for failure to conform with the labeling requirements, even, I don't feel strongly about, but probably doesn't hurt anything. And
go ahead.
I'm glad, Mr. Gillander, you raised what is item 11 in the motion. And I would submit that contention is just simply wrong. The measure does not extend immunity against private rights of action to advertising as well as sale and labeling of the food as suggested. If you look at the language of the measure, advertising and sale are terms that simply identify the people against whom there is no private right of action. It doesn't in any way, shape, or form address whether there is or is not a private right of action concerning activities like advertising and sale. The language is there is no private right of action against a distributor, manufacturer, or retailer that sells or advertises food. So that's just identifying who we're dealing with here. For what is there no private right of action? For failure to conform to the labeling requirements under paragraph Q. So it's simply not the case that we're either prohibiting or creating a private right of action for concerning the advertisement or sale of these goods. It's only labeling.
Right, but I think you're making the objector's point for them, in which is that you're limiting the universe of people who are subject to a private right of action. And right now, what they're arguing, I believe, is that the title doesn't really do that, or at least not as much as it should.
Well, the way I read 11, section 11, is there's an objection to the fact that the title does not notify the voter that the measure extends immunity against private rights of action to advertising as well as sale. That is just not the case. How you advertise GMOs is not regulated in any way, shape, or form by this measure. All the measure is saying that is, if you are a retailer, distributor, or manufacturer who sells or advertises, there's no private right of action for you arising out of the labeling requirements of this measure.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah, I agree with that
statement.
I'm just not sure that our language in the existing title says that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's a little broader, right? It talks about, it doesn't add that additional qualifier. It says no private right of action against distributors, manufacturers, or retailers. That's adequate. And why further identify which advertisers or which distributors, manufacturers, and retailers we're talking about, other than to add more words?
So the way this, as I understand it, the way this works is, so this fits in with a statutory scheme in which it is prohibited selling, manufacturing, delivering, or holding or offering for sale anything that is, any food that is misbranded is prohibited. So I think then Q creates a special type of misbranding that would then be prohibited, right? And the question is, does four, so I imagine, I guess, a transportation company, a rail company, or a trucking company or something that for whatever reason sprays the corn or something that they're transporting with some genetic, something that would then qualify everything they're delivering as genetically modified. They might be subject to the prohibition. They might have then distributed, if not sold, genetically modified food that is, I believe, misbranded under this provision. The question then is, would they be subject to a private right of action for failure to comply with this new subsection Q? They would, I think, clearly be subject to punishment under 25.5403, but that's not a private right of action. And so that's what I'm, and that's a slight variation, I guess, on the grain silo where they're just holding it. But if they somehow violated this by then putting into the stream of commerce mislabeled food.
Well, Mr. Domenico, in your hypothetical, first of all, the definition of distributor includes a person who transports food. So no private right against of action against someone who transports. And if they sprayed something on the food, they would certainly fall within the definition of manufacturer, which includes the production or processing. So if you spray something on it, you further process the food. So, I mean, despite everyone's best efforts here to find someone who's not a retailer, distributor, or manufacturer, they just don't exist. At least they are not regulated by this measure.
That's sort of the conclusion I came to, too, which is anybody that might do something that would run afoul of Q could get in trouble under the already existing provisions of 25.5.403, but the point of 4 here is that there wouldn't also be a private right of action, at least not one specifically caused by Q. There might be whatever other tort or contractual claim, I suppose, you might be able to bring against them, but it wouldn't be for violating Q. So, again, I'm not sure much is added by the additional language we're considering, if anything.
You're writing.
So. Yeah.
You have a proposal?
Not quite yet, but I'm getting there. I mean, if we do think that this private right of action thing is a central feature of the measure, and I think that someone voting on this might want to know if they could sue to have it enforced or file laws against someone who, you know, if they end up eating some food they wish they hadn't eaten, does it make more sense to phrase it in that term and say something like, you know, and specifying that an individual cannot sue a person obliged to conform to the labeling requirements for failure to do so, or something like that.
Well, I had one similar thought, but kind of less of a change, which was just specifying that no private right of action is created for failure to conform to the labeling requirements.
That's fine by me.
Which doesn't quite
I mean, it seems that we could also maybe wrap up Mr. Gruskin's arguments about what can happen by, instead of using the private right of action, maybe we could just say enforcement is limited to Department of Health and criminal prosecution or something like that. And then people would understand that they can't sue and that enforcement is about, you know, I don't know.
That's not
what?
I think I generally like that.
Yeah, I mean, instead of, I don't know what if people really understand what a private right of action is. That was always sort of my issue with the language.
I don't know, I'm not sure I'm comfortable. Just wonder if that's assuming more than I'm comfortable I know about how it would work in practice. Seems to be interpreting it fairly. I mean, it seems right to me. I'm just not totally comfortable how it works with everything else in the law to say that.
Mr. Rogers, do you think enforcement is limited to Department of Health? And I mean, do you think that that's an accurate statement?
Well, I think violation of the misbranding section is also a misdemeanor in certain circumstances, right. And that would be enforced by
criminal enforcement. We could say criminal enforcement or
government.
Government.
I think we're probably pretty deep in the weeds here on.
Yeah, I think because I think there is consumer protection authority to enforce this sort of thing. I'm informed. So I mean, maybe I'm coming around to Madam Chairman's view that as important as this might be for lawyers, for voters, what it doesn't do, maybe not all that material, that it doesn't authorize them to bring a private lawsuit. I mean, I obviously understand why it's in the measure. But not completely sure it's material in the sort of title board sense of material.
It is a good point that we don't typically include in the title what's not happening. And this is
sort of
a limitation on what is happening, I guess.
Right. I guess if you didn't have that section 4, there might be. I mean, there might. It might be more than just confusion. I mean, this might be actually doing something, as in creating an exemption from sort of existing doctrine about private rights of action. The consumer protection laws, for example, allow private enforcement sometimes. And actually, I'm not sure how that would work with this sort of provision. Look, I think my bottom line position, now that I've thought out loud about it long enough, is that if the proponents are comfortable leaving some of this out at the risk of Mr. Gruskin convincing the Supreme Court that the title doesn't have material language, if we're basically comfortable with it, I would suggest changing in connection with to basically for failure to conform, and allow the proponents to run that risk, because I think that is accurate and covers all the material aspects of it, even recognizing that Mr. Gruskin's arguments aren't completely without any merit.
For what it's worth, I agree with that. I'm fine going along with that, and I guess I'll move it.
Failure to conform to a letter.
Conform to is probably proper. That's the actual language in the measure. So with that language moved, I'll second it.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Moving through the motion, it seems to me like we dealt with 3 when we agreed to stick with our original single subject. Same with 4. And those are things to be considered in the trailer, I suppose. Okay. seem to remember us talking quite a bit about the restaurant food last time. I don't really have much to say to start with on that, I don't think, so if anyone else does.
Well, as I understand the motion, it basically is pointing out that in our current version, that comes before that modifies food on line four is a little bit wishy-washy or doesn't convey enough information. We did talk about it quite a bit because I'm still confused about what qualifies as restaurant food. I don't think the motion is quite right that all restaurant food necessarily is exempted, because the restaurant food language is a subsection of QV, so it's got to be food that's not packaged for retail sale and is restaurant food, basically. But it may seem, in general, it may be worthwhile putting back in something specific about restaurants.
Go ahead.
So, Madam Chair, we've the measure doesn't exclude all restaurant food, as Mr. Domenico has, I think, pointed out. It excludes foods not packaged for retail sale that then meet the requirements of A or B. So, for instance, I could go into a deli and buy a Diet Pepsi. That's packaged for retail sale. If the Diet Pepsi contains genetically modified food, there needs to be a label on that packaging. So simply saying excludes all restaurant food would not be accurate. But, you know, I want to point out that this is the first of five objections concerning the exclusions. And as we looked at this, it did occur to us that it may be appropriate to note something along the lines of this. You know, the measure exempts some foods, including among others, and then continue with the language in the measure. The thinking there is that we've hit the high points. We've hit the exemptions that are going to be informative to the voters. We have not identified further exemptions that are really quite technical and would not be meaningful to the voters. Although we do have a certain concern, I suppose, that the current language may appear to be inclusive, and that is not entirely accurate.
I had a suggestion along those lines that might allow us to adjust the title to reflect some of those concerns and some of those made in the rehearing, which was essentially to rearrange things slightly. And one suggestion, and this may not end up working, but would be to basically move the language beginning with certain food through retail sale to after medically prescribed food. And then, so then I guess it would have to say, you'd have to move the and from before medically to before certain. And then it would be something like, then you would describe the certain, the not packaged food in a little bit more detail. So it would say something like including restaurant food, including I might need some tweaking, but it seems to at least be a slightly better format for trying to address some of these issues.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, as we looked again at 5 and A and B, we racked our brains to try to determine what would be a food not packaged for retail sale that doesn't satisfy either A or B. Frankly, couldn't come up with anything. A and B are really kind of belt and suspenders provisions. There may be an exception or a food that falls within those categories. Frankly, we just haven't been able to think to come up with what it is. And so for that reason, I think identifying that the exemption is foods not packaged for retail sale really is sufficient. I would also note that getting down into A and B, we're really getting down into the level of detail that is not necessary to communicate accurately the key provisions of the measure to the voter.
I think I'm fine with what Mr. Domenico has suggested in terms of including the restaurant food, and I also don't really like the word certain, but I think that we have to have something in there that essentially tells people you're going to have to go look at the measure if you really want the answer. I mean, there's no way we can put everything in there. It'll be... It'll just add to confusion. Where are you?
I think I kind of like the concept we talked about a little bit before, which you just say something like exempting some foods, and then something like included but not limited to, or including some foods among others. I think, let's say exempting some foods, including but not limited to, and then do the alcohol, animal medically prescribed, and then I don't know if most is too strong. There's certain or most food that is not packaged for retail sale. I think we decided last time, it probably doesn't hurt to list the gum in there just because it's on the list with the others, and I don't know if there's a distinct reason to exclude it.
Does this give me a chance to make my joke about the gum lobby?
Yeah.
All right, so that's it. That's my joke. The powerful gum lobby. I mean, the gum one is sort of not, So we have to draw a line somewhere, right, about what's material.
Right.
The gum one seems immaterial to me because I can't imagine any voter changing their vote on a measure like this over whether, like, literally not even a single voter. And so if no voter would change their vote over gum, then it can't be material. The sort of more complicated exemption for food derived from an animal that, you know, that's not itself been genetically engineered, that one makes me a little more nervous that we kind of ignored that one, mostly because it was sort of intimidating less than it was immaterial, that we just didn't understand it well enough and skipped it. That one makes me a little bit confused, which is, I think, number
six
in the list of complaints. I mean, are you all comfortable? You understand what that, like, what falls into that category? Because I don't think I am.
No.
Maybe Mr. Rogers can help us understand six.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, the addition of the including but not limited to language really, I think, addresses the problem. Now, if you decide this is a major issue, not a detail, you could include it. We think it's a detail. So, what we're after here, what the initiative is after, is the regulation of genetically modified foods. What we're not after, as this exemption states, is, you know, if you've got a cow that's been fed genetically modified grain, then the cow itself is not genetically modified, and thus labeling of the beef or the milk from that cow is not required. So I think this is something that a voter would certainly not anticipate being labeled. The voter is going to see that the purpose here is to label foods that have themselves been genetically modified.
All right, but that only applies to animals. So if you fertilize your plants or somehow treat them in a way
and plants with
genetically modified such and such, that still is not exempt, right?
Well, that's addressed in 12.5C1.
Right. As long as your genetically engineered fertilizer is manure,
right,
you're okay. Otherwise, if it's some other kind of fertilizer, that's the way I read it, and I don't know enough about fertilizer to know how, despite spending so much time in government, I don't know enough about fertilizer to really know how big a category it is of what kind of plants are treated with other types of fertilizer that might be itself genetically modified.
Well, so the exception only applies to animals.
Right.
So if we're dealing with it as an exception, I think my explanation covers it.
I agree with you.
Okay.
That it only covers animals. And then there's another exception for certain types of fertilizer manure.
Well, that's back in the definition.
For plants, right. So then it's not genetically engineered. But if you put some other thing on your corn that is genetically modified, your corn becomes genetically engineered. But if you feed it to a cow or something, that cow is exempt under the provision we're talking about here, 6, right?
Correct.
Okay.
This is Mark Ruskin. I do think it's important. I mean, notwithstanding my vegetarian friends, I do think that people who eat meat or cheese or have those sorts of products deserve to know that if you put a substance on a plant, it is genetically modified. If you put that same substance in the mouth of an animal, it is not genetically modified. And maybe you're not going to say both, but you sure ought to say the latter, that meat, cheese, and dairy products are not going to be affected by this labeling requirement.
Well, they could be affected if... I mean, if the growth hormones are... I mean, milk is already labeled that way. So it's labeled in the reverse. It's never labeled, this has GMOs, but it's labeled, this does not. So there has to be...
The market working.
Yeah, but there has to be some effect. I guess I'm saying there has to be some effect. I mean, milk is obviously must be capable of being genetically engineered, right? I mean, I don't know, Mr. Rogers. I mean, you certainly see it on the dairy products everywhere, so how does that? I mean, what are they talking about when they say growth hormone? Yeah,
so
I didn't either.
But well, look, I think.
I just know my daughter makes me buy that, so there must be some reason for it.
I think there's a difference between milk produced from a cow that has been given hormones.
Right.
And a genetically and milk from a genetically modified cow.
Okay.
So
can you genetically modify a cow?
Sure you can.
You can, okay.
I do it all the time.
I don't even know that.
Did it last week.
Okay. Well, if you cross cows with different breeds or something,
no.
Not.
I don't know.
No, that would not be genetic. I mean, that's clearly exempted.
oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good.
I mean, I could read you the, I mean.
No, it's, well, it requires direct injection, right, of
no
nucleic acid.
Should have brought a biologist.
I mean, my understanding is that the in vitro nucleic acid techniques, including recombinant dexaribonucleic acid techniques, and the direct injection of nucleic acid into cells or organelles is not equivalent to giving a cow a hormone, my understanding. So I think we're talking about apples and oranges when we get into hormones given to an animal.
No, that's the way I read it, too. That's
okay.
My understanding.
Paragraph Q6. Exempts animals that are fed or injected with any food produced with genetic engineering or any drug. So if they've been injected with any drug that's been produced through means of genetic engineering. I would think that the voters might want to know that cows or sheep or other animals that are so treated are not subject to this measure. That's all I'm saying.
Jason, you want
to? I really don't know what to do with this. I'm not entirely sure that this sub this Roman numeral six, you know, with this exemption is even consistent with 12.5(c)(1). Because it seems like six says, okay, if the animal hasn't been genetically engineered, even if it's been injected, fed or injected with something that's been genetically engineered, it's not subject to the requirement. But then C1 says a food is otherwise considered genetically engineered if the organism has been treated with a genetically engineered material. So I guess maybe you say, you know, the specific in six outweighs the general or something, but I'm concerned that this particular provision is maybe not sort of subject to being understood by us, which I think the discussion is sort of showing, and that maybe it's best left to the blue book and covered for purposes of the title with the including but not limited to.
Yeah, frankly, I mean, to me, the exemption in six is necessary, but it's the surprising part to me, I think, is the breadth of the definition in C1.
Right.
That it's not so much that it's surprising to me that I would think, all right, so genetically modified beef, a mutant cow beef, would have to be labeled, but not necessarily regular cows that are fed with mutant corn, which is. So the exemption sets it up the way I would kind of think of it. But now the fact if I have kind of some kind of corn that's not itself genetically modified, but I fertilize it with some something that is, that's what's a little bit, the breadth of C1 is the surprising part to me. It's not the exemption in 6 that I find sort of.
If I can jump in, I mean, to me what it's saying is reading 6 with C1, I'm not entirely sure that 6 actually applies to anything in the real world.
That 6 doesn't?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I would think it does. Because C1 would say if you feed or if you treat your animal with something that's been genetically engineered, a hormone, something else, then it would be
genetically
engineered under C1, but 6 says it's not covered. But if it's not animal food under 6, it would be covered.
Right, but see, what I'm saying is I think C1 says that if it's had that feed, then it's been genetically engineered. So under 6, it falls under an animal. It's not an animal that has not itself been genetically engineered. See, I guess where I'm going with it is if because of inconsistency, intentional or not, in the measure, 6 doesn't actually cover anything, then we don't need to talk about it in the title.
Well, and my concern is that if we put anything down, I think there's a decent chance it's going to be misleading because we don't know what that means. And I don't want to put something in the measure that we try to hash out amongst, you know, 8 lawyers who don't know anything about genetic engineering. So, I mean, Mr. Rogers, if you want to, I mean, I'm just trying to balance between putting things in the measure that are relevant to the voters versus putting something in that's going to be misleading.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, the addition of some foods, including but not limited to, I think really is a cue to the voter that if they happen to have a degree in biology, they need to go read the measure and get down into the weeds. But for the average voter, we have, I think you have adequately identified the exclusion and you've signaled to the voter that there is more technical information about exclusions to be found.
Well, I think I understand how it's supposed to work, basically. I don't understand, obviously, how often something would fall within C1 and then you know, a plant or some sort of food that would fall under C1. I don't understand, but the fact that, as Mr. Gruskin points out, food that's cows that have been injected or fed with genetically modified food are not themselves covered seems clear enough from the measure. I mean, I think I understand Mr. Gellender's point, but I find it highly unlikely it'd be interpreted that way. So to me, it's not so much I don't understand it. It's whether it's material that there's that exemption in 6 that we should describe.
And I guess I would lean back towards not putting things in that are not part of, I mean, again, it's back to no private right of action, what it doesn't do as opposed to what it does do.
Well, right. But I guess the contrary argument is there's probably, and I don't know, maybe I need to go back home to Boulder for a little while and meet with my people, but to figure this out. But it seems to me there's probably a larger universe of people who would be concerned about the food that cows and chickens and things that have been fed or injected with genetically modified treatments than there is about people that are all that concerned about genetically modified bourbon or beer, to be honest with you. So we've got alcoholic beverages, animal food, medically prescribed food, but not, you know, whether your beef is injected. That, to me, seems maybe not to match up with what voters might actually be concerned about.
And in Mr. Gruskin's, how did he word it? Is that the meat, cheese, and dairy products that were derived from animals given feed, injections, or drugs? Would that would be the language? Okay. Mr. Rogers, do you think there's anything misleading or inaccurate about that statement in Mr. Gruskin's proposal? Because that's really my primary concern is... Oh, sure.
As you've heard, our preference would be not to go down this road. If we're going to go down this road, it seems that we are just making stuff up when we talk about meat, cheese, dairy products,
yeah,
et cetera. We should probably default to the language of the initiative, which would be, you know, some selection of words from 6. An animal not itself genetically engineered. Fed or injected with a food produced with genetic engineering or drug that's been produced through means of genetic engineering.
So that would be something like an animal that is not itself genetically engineered. But is given feed injections or drugs produced with genetic engineering? Would that kind of be the hybrid? That's sort of what it seems to me it would be.
I differ with Mr. Rogers. I'd be careful about getting trapped into the lingo that he's built into paragraph 6. But go back up to, it's food consisting of. So the truth is, if you're not comfortable with, and I can't imagine a food other than meat, cheese, and a dairy product that would be involved, but it would be any food that was derived from animals given feed, injections, or drugs produced with genetic engineering.
I mean, you could just say meat and dairy products. Isn't cheese a dairy product? I thought it was.
Yeah, probably I'm, is.
Yeah.
Probably is.
I need to go watch Food Inc., I guess.
Food. Some people consider meat to be a narrower category, I think. I would say
food.
Food.
But I think you have to say the animal. I mean,
Right. Food derived from animals.
From an animal that is not itself genetically engineered. So, Stephen, that would be foods derived from animals, from an animal that is not itself genetically engineered. But what, has been given feed, injection, or drugs produced with genetic engineering? Is that where we're?
I think.
Or you got something else?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. You go from there, or however you wanted to have it read.
Yeah, I would just say, instead of foods, I'll just say food. I don't even know if you need a derived.
No.
Just say from.
From, right.
And with the plural here, so I'd say food from animals that are not genetically engineered. I'm going plural in general.
But
have been fed or treated with genetically engineered food or drugs. And then I think well, I want to hear for others on the last one. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Mr. Gruskin, you can go ahead. Okay.
On the last clause with the retail sale, I don't know that the average voter cares about retail sale per se. I think I'd say just most unpackaged, processed, and restaurant food.
Let's unpack it. Oh. If you get it out of the salad bar, is that sufficient enough for people to understand it's not packaged? Because I think last time we heard if you get it out of the, if you make it yourself, basically, at the Whole Foods salad bar, it's not packaged.
I have the most in there to sort of,
okay.
Because I think most cover, I think it does cover most. And
most, I'm, okay. But, you have a comment?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Dan Bokash. I work here.
Have you seen Food Inc.? Are you going to help us out?
No. I was in Future Farmers of America. If that helps.
Oh.
I think just for the sake of being succinct, you could just say a non-engineered animal, because I'm just worried that voters could get lost in what we just added.
A non-engineered? Well, we got to use genetically engineered, I think, to be consistent.
True. But just, that was just my concern. That's all.
The only thing I would say is that line 6 where it says, but have been fed or treated with genetically food, or what the measure actually says is fed or injected with any food or drugs. So
okay.
I think the treatment refers back to that general definition someplace else in the measure, but that's what 6 actually talks about.
So, if you rub your cow genetically engineered your Kobe beef when you're massaging your Kobe beef, if your massage oil is genetically engineered, you would not be exempt. Is that right? I'm okay with that.
All right. You want to make a motion?
Sure. I guess I move that we adopt the language we've just changed in the last 20 minutes or so. Second? Anyone?
I don't know. We have people. Let's wait a minute. Mr. Rogers, you want to opine on this?
Well, just a preference would express a preference for treated as opposed to fed or injected. It's fewer words.
Is feeding treating?
How about given?
Giving?
Been given genetically engineered food or drugs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Gruskin, you have a counterpoint?
Well, I'd suggest that given, I mean, to use Mr. Domenico's analysis of a cow masseuse, I mean, you know, you could make a gift to an animal, but the point of the measure is that it's been ingested or it's been made part of the animal. And therefore, given genetically engineered food or drugs doesn't mean that those drugs or food have to end up in the organism.
You're saying that you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink.
To certain water, but not others. The other thing I'd say is that I think a really good point was made, although I think it was Mr. Domenico mentioned beer or bourbon might not, genetically modified beer or bourbon might not be an issue for a lot of voters. I think the phrase that you're working on right now takes precedence over alcoholic beverages, animal food, and medically prescribed food. We're now talking about a category of food that most voters will actually encounter and will encounter on a personal basis for themselves, assuming that they eat, and for their families and their loved ones, assuming that they buy food. And therefore, it seems to me to lead with what are basically marginal exceptions, like animal food and booze, is not as relevant to the voter as things that they are actually going to eat. So I would suggest both a placement and a wording revision from what's currently on the screen.
I think we did that just as a way to be able to say some foods before without saying some foods and then having it be from animals that are not, I mean, that one is not some, not in the category of some, but anyway, Mr.
So, I just want to point out that you have used genetically modified throughout with the exception of the required language produced with genetic engineering. And so in this section, shouldn't we change engineered to modified in the two places?
I think we should be consistent. Well, go ahead.
The engineering tracks the language of the measure.
Now, they're
defined term.
They're interchangeable. I mean, they're defined to mean the same in the measure, but you know, for the sake of consistency,
we could use engineered everywhere.
Exactly.
If you want to do that.
But the way the drafters have crafted the measure, things are either genetically modified or produced with genetically from genetic engineering. And this is a provision that talks about food that was produced with genetic engineering. So, I mean, I'm all for consistency and clarity, but I'm not the, you know, the presumably the phrase produced from genetically and from genetic engineering had a purpose. Otherwise, why didn't they just use genetically modified throughout? And frankly, I think this comes back to some of the comments that I've made. This may be one of those issues that you resolve at the end of the ballot title setting process rather than figuring it out in the middle. If you indicate that there are definitions, if you strike that reference, as we've suggested, to the label wording, I think this becomes a lot easier.
Yeah, that does raise one issue that I was not sure when to discuss, but the label, I'm not sure whether to take out the language of the label itself, but that little phrase there doesn't really say what that label has to appear on. It just says requiring that the words appear on the label, but doesn't say on what. And Mr. Gruskin's point is correct, that other than this exception that we've been dealing with right now, the measure applies not just to genetically modified food, but food produced with genetically modified or engineered food. That's what C1 does. C1 and 2. And so it might make sense to say requiring that the words, that might be a place to insert that notion, requiring that the words produced with genetic engineering appear, et cetera, on the label of any food that is genetically engineered or that's produced or has been treated with a genetically engineered material.
Well, if you're going to go in that direction, then I think that would go, and I believe Mr. Gruskin had this in his proposed title. I think I would keep it simpler and just say, you know, genetically engineered as defined in the measure, which then incorporates the producer and gives people notice to go look at the text if they really want to know what it is.
And I think that could go back to Mr. Gruskin's point that maybe that gets swept in at the end when we get to the provision about whether we're going to say as defined in the measure, adding definitions.
Well, that still doesn't quite resolve the issue because, I mean, the point that I made earlier is that C to me is kind of what makes 6 necessary and creates a little bit of the confusion, which is that it's not just if your food is itself genetically engineered as defined in the measure. It's if it's treated or contains a component that is itself genetically engineered. So your fruit somehow has got a preservative on it, or whatever, the wax that they put on apples that you're supposed to wash off. That itself is genetically engineered, would, under my reading of this, require a label on the apple.
Right, but keep in mind that C1 is incorporated into the definition of genetically engineered under 12.5. It's part of that definition.
Right, but I mean, that's lawyer talk. Like, that's not... I mean, the point is here to explain to a voter what they're voting on, which I liked Mr. Gruskin's idea, I think it was, or maybe it was... No, it was Mr. Rogers, that we should actually just put the entire measure on the ballot and we could all go home. It's actually my proposal for the whole title process would be improved. But to me, I think... If we're going to try to just give a summary, it's important that you can have a nice, unengineered product, but if it's been fertilized with something or treated with something that itself fits the definition, then you're applying it to that, except for the animal exemption.
To me, I mean, I'll just have a difference of opinion on that. I think, I mean, maybe you can come up with language that's, you know, in fact, that's reasonably brief and gets that across. To me, I think giving the voters notice that, you know, the definition in the measure, that there's a definition of genetically engineered in the measure that they should look at. And when they get a blue book, the blue book is going to describe what you're talking about, and they have a lot more space to do it, and it's not a single sentence that's, you know, already getting a little bit on the long side. So it's just a
I'd be willing to do that, but then I don't understand why wouldn't we then say, all right, so requiring labeling of genetically modified food as defined in the measure with a bunch of exceptions that are listed in the measure and some administrative provisions that are listed in the measure. I mean, I probably would actually be okay with that. But, you know, the definition is at least as important to me as what's carved out of the definition. And if we're just going to refer people to the measure, then fine. But by doing that with one thing and not others, you're, to me, telling them, yeah, the definition's kind of not really, unless you're really concerned about it, but here are some things we think really are important, like that it doesn't cover alcohol.
Here, let me throw out a suggestion at least, because maybe part of my difficulty is I haven't seen sort of how you would do it. But if we said something like, in the single subject, concerning labeling of genetically modified food, including, and then however you want to phrase your few words, you know, the not itself genetically engineered, but it's, you know, the C1 language, if we can find a succinct and non-misleading way to do that, I think that's one approach that could work.
I mean, I think we could also just take out, I mean, our first part could start with, rather than the part about the label, I think we need to bring up the genetic engineering, but maybe it should be in the context of requiring labels for genetically engineered food defined as X.
Well, I mean, the definition, the complicated part of definition is not, of the definition isn't really C, it's A and B. C just kind of extends that definition to sort of the input stage. And I think all you'd have to say, I wouldn't want to put it in the statement of the single subject, I don't think. I'm not sure I have a strong feeling about leaving in or taking out the actual language of the label. But either way, you could say requiring
that, I mean, if you're going to take it out, you could say requiring that genetically modified foods or foods that have been treated or contain a component that is genetically engineered be labeled as genetic, however you want to say it. That's all you would have to add, in my opinion, to talk about that extra step. And then, yeah, if you want to find out about what sort of DNA techniques are covered and which aren't, that's, you got to look at the measure. But the important thing to me is that even if you know that, this takes it one step beyond what kind of just saying genetically modified food would trigger, in my mind at least.
So 2 points. First, in common parlance, genetically modified, in the proponent's experience, is a much more commonly used term than genetically engineered. We have made those equivalent terms in the measure to avoid creating a loophole, something that is genetically modified but not genetically engineered, but certainly the appropriate language to communicate accurately to the voters what we're doing is genetically modified throughout. The second point is, when you look at the definition, the way to kind of sum it up is, if you might put something genetically modified in your mouth, it's defined as genetically modified food. So that includes food that's actually been genetically modified. It includes food treated with genetically modified treatment. It includes foods that contain an ingredient, component, or other article that's genetically engineered. So it's not, I don't think it's terribly difficult to understand what we're getting out there. If you might put something that's genetically modified in your mouth, that's included in the definition. I think that's pretty clearly communicated to the voters when you say, this is a measure about the labeling of genetically modified food. I don't think you have to go much further than that.
So if that's the common use, then why do you have the label say genetic engineering?
Because this is a clearer way to state that on the label. If we were to use genetically modified, then we would have to say is or includes or has been treated with genetically modified food. Produced with genetic engineering is a way to boil that label down to 4 words. Frankly, we couldn't come up with a way to do that by using the term genetically modified. Okay.
You have a suggestion, or you want to take a break?
The sort of one big exception that I see is or that the kind of category that shows where the type of concern I have about just kind of leaving it is fertilizer or that sort of thing, say at an orchard or something, that really would sort of be very indirect how the genetically modified non-manure fertilizer might get to into your mouth. But so that's kind of why I would suggest including the treated language that's especially in C1. C2 is a little bit more straightforward, obviously, an ingredient or component. But maybe we need to first deal with whether to have the label in the title, because I think it affects how you would write the language. But, you know, I would probably leave it, but I'm willing to consider taking it out.
Well, I think if the motion asks that it be taken out, unless the proponent wants it in, the easier thing is to just take it out and then write something out. Does the proponent have any feelings about that particular labeling requirement being in the measure?
Oh.
Frankly, we thought it was the simplest way to convey the requirements of the measure. Give me one sec, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
I mean, I have to say I don't quite understand what you would do otherwise.
Right.
And I'll weigh in and also say that I think from the notice perspective of the public, if I'm the voter voting on this, and when I have the exact words, I'm like, okay, if I vote for this, when I go to the store, I will see these words on something if it's been genetically modified. I think it's very useful from a voter perspective.
Right. So my suggestion would be to leave it, and then to deal with my concern, if you left it, all you'd have to do is after on the label on line 3, it would just simply have to say something like on the label of food that has been genetically modified or treated with genetically modified or engineered material.
Yeah, I like that. Starbucks, a restaurant.
Yeah,
all right, drink this.
Are you okay? A break might not be a bad idea. Let me just say this. The fact that the proponents needed to come up with a four-word label is interesting. I don't really get why, but they have used a phrase that basically skews the entire title because we are including it. Your single subject statement says labeling of genetically modified food. If you were right when you decided to leave it at that language, then no one's going to wonder whether or not genetically modified food will have a label on it that indicates that. And if you do think that's a problem, then maybe that's not the best phrase to use. I would just remind you that the phrase that's been added doesn't include the fact that you have feed and injections. And I don't know that treatment is broad enough necessarily. But the title has been made longer by a couple dozen words because of the need to describe and then qualify and then define the words on the label. If people are being told by the title that they will have notice, why use basically 2+ lines to tell them what that notice is? And if you're not otherwise communicating that they're going to have notice, then maybe we just ought to toy with a single subject statement and cut the title by 2 lines.
Can I shorten it while conveying the same information or make a proposal to do so?
Sure.
Okay. Have the trailer be requiring food that has been genetically modified or treated with genetically modified material to be labeled as, quotes, produced with genetic engineering. And I guess you could say labeled or identified if you want to get into the bins and the raw foods, but I don't know that that's necessary.
I'm not sure about with, but the rest of that makes sense to me.
I mean that. Y'all mind taking a 5-minute break?
Not at all.
Okay. Let's take a 5-minute break and you can stare at it.